medication and the progress that's been made. But the other side of me is saying, gosh, people are getting hurt. Is it really, should we, as KBOO, you know, and I am also, you know, a KBOO volunteer, should we really be, you know, encouraging people to stay in the streets without, you know, there may be a strategy of withdrawing from the streets and certainly working. I mean, certainly
20 seconds. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Certainly working simultaneously at the same time with you know, stuff at home, you know, in the legal system, but maybe staying home is okay for folk now that you know, just to stay safe for a while, and then we can go out at other times and demonstrate a specific way. I know.
Okay.
Do you want to speak to that at all?
I think I understand what you said, and I'll have to leave it at that because I do have to wrap it up now. Thank you for calling. Quick news you're not supposed to know. The Baltic Dry Index is still limping along in the 1400s and would be even lower if not for the Chinese metal demand. Gold is over 2,000 an ounce, well over on panic buying. What does this mean? This means trouble. This means trouble. And so I'm sorry I have to leave it at that. And thank you for listening to Press Watch. Stay tuned for Parafoggering Fight the Empire coming right up. You've been listening on 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia and via KBOO.FM and in that manner to all the ships at sea.
You know what that means. It's time for Fight the Empire with your host, Per Fograin. Take it away, Per.
Well, good rainy morning. Well, this is a big day today. This is 75 years ago, the United States dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima, Japan. And Hiroshima was not a big military city. It was relatively untouched by the war, which is one reason why it was selected for a target. It was kind of a demonstration target. And so the United States dropped this first atomic bomb ever used on Hiroshima, and it, well, right away it killed about 75,000 people, and the death toll mounted because of radiation. And the U.S., well, perhaps to kind of deflect some of the blame for this horrible weapon, the U.S. claimed that it was used to avoid an invasion of Japan, and that this would have cost more lives on both sides if an invasion had been necessary. Well, this was not really true. This is an excuse, because Japan was already ready to surrender. They had put out surrender feelers as early as 1944. Their main thing was that they wanted to keep their emperor. They were willing to kind of give up everything else, but they wanted to save the, I guess they were afraid that the emperor would be tried and executed as a war criminal. So they wanted, that was their one stipulation, that the emperor stays on his throne, without power, but on the throne. And eventually, this is exactly what happened. You know, Japan did surrender, and the emperor's, Japan still has an emperor. So if what was the real purpose of the atomic bombing? Well, there's many people have said it was to intimidate the Soviet Union because they were about ready to enter the war. They had defeated Germany, and now they had armies in the Far East ready to invade Japan, and so they were. The atomic bombing was a way of kind of ending the war before the Soviets could enter it. General Leslie Groves confirmed this. He told some visiting British people. Leslie Groves was the leader. He was the one who directed the Manhattan Project, which is what developed the atomic bomb and exploded a test bomb out in the Southwest Desert. And he told these visiting Britishers that the purpose was to, quote, subdue the Russians. In fact, on August 30th, 1945, General Groves got a list of targets, of the Soviet targets, and the number of bombs that would be required to destroy them. Earlier, in May of 1945, Winston Churchill had come up with this a war plan called Operation Unthinkable, and involved invading the Soviet Union. It was never carried out because Churchill was voted out of power in 1945, and the new Labor government just kind of quietly dropped the whole thing. The plan assumed a kind of surprise attack on the Soviet forces stationed in Germany, and it was to, quote, impose the will of the Western Allies on the Soviets. But like I said, this was not carried out because the Labor government dropped the whole thing. Later on, the U.S. came up with a plan called Operation Drop Shot, and that was involved an attack on the Soviet Union, and also this plan was never actually carried out, but it was this was in 1949, so this is after the war was over. And so Operation Drop Shot was came up in 1949. It was on the books. A very interesting thing. I don't know, a lot of people have sort of forgotten about this, but back in 1951, there was a very popular magazine in the United States, Collier's Magazine, which no longer exists, but it was pretty big in that time. And they devoted, in 1959, in October, they devoted an entire 130-page issue to a hypothetical Third World War. And the feature article was, quote, preview of the war we do not want, an imaginary count of Russia's defeat and occupation, 1952 to 1960. And a lot of well-known writers of the times contributed to this issue. Edward R. Murrow, Arthur Kessler, Marguerite Higgins, Walter Winchell, the New York gossip columnist, they all contributed to this special issue. And in the issue, Soviet forces invaded Yugoslavia to to support an anti-Tito uprising. And it's very interesting because years later, this is exactly what happened, only it was sort of the other way around. Europe and NATO got involved in a civil war to sort of dismember Yugoslavia. That came 40 years after. But so the idea of an invasion of the Soviet Union is has been around for quite a while, and the plans, a lot of the plans involve civil defense, because if you're going to bomb another country, you leave yourself open to being bombed yourself. And so civil defense became a big thing in the United States back in the 50s. There was all sorts of talk of the kind of backyard bomb shelters. So this was a sort of the background for the atomic bomb on Hiroshima 75 years ago. It was a way of warning the Soviets that we had the bomb, but and they didn't. We didn't think they did, and so that they better kind of get in line and do what we wanted, or else they could get the same treatment that that Japan got. Well, it turned out that actually, not too long after that, the Soviet Union did get a bomb. The U.S. had plans to, they had a kind of a timeline. At that time, the only way to deliver an atomic bomb was by a B-52 bomber. And the U.S., kind of the war strategists, they felt that they needed to have a stockpile of 300 bombs, you know, to kind of wipe out all the targets, so that there could be no retaliation. And to deliver these 300 bombs, they needed an equivalent number of B-52 bombers. So there was a timeline. It was going to take a few years to get this this plan in operation. And I think they sort of say the target the year was, I believe, 1952 or 1950. But then the Soviets, in 1949, they exploded their own atomic bomb. And they had gotten the plans. They had, spies had gotten, the Soviets knew that the U.S. had developed an atomic bomb. There was no secret to them, but they didn't know exactly how to put one together themselves. But they, helped by spies, they quickly they were able to put together their own atomic bomb. And when that happened, when they exploded there, when they tested their bomb in 1949, our war strategists realized that the plan was not going to happen, and so they just quietly dropped the whole thing, or they dropped that aspect of it. There have been some very interesting article by David Lindorf, a peace activist, and he says that actually there was I think in 1987 there was a book came out by Michio Kaku, the physicist, and another author, and it was, I think the title was To Win a Nuclear War. Yeah, by Michio Kaku and Daniel Axelrod. And according to this, this book came out in 1987, the U.S. is planning to launch a devastating first strike on the Soviet Union as soon as it could build and deliver 300 nuclear bombs. But the like I said, the Soviets got wind of this. They came up with their own bomb in 1949. And so, according to the Kaku and Axelrod, the spies who delivered the secrets of the atomic bomb to the Soviets were really kind of heroes. They saved the world from probably a certain destruction, because our strategists did not realize what a nuclear war could do. They thought it could be a few cities, 300 cities. Imagine that now. Nobody would think that you could bomb, do nuclear bombings on 300 targets without serious, probably fatal effects on global climate. We call it nuclear winter. But they didn't know that then, and so they thought they could get away with it. And so if this plan had gone through, they would have found that by destroying the Soviet Union, they were basically destroying the world. So according to Kaku and Axelrod, the people, the spies who are vilified in this country, they saved the world from probably almost certain destruction. So if people want to call in with their comments on this, the number is 231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Well, this is sort of, that was 75 years ago, but the Soviet Union is gone. They kind of went under around 1990 or so, 1989. But the war plans still persist. You know, we still have this this idea that that Russia, that non-communist capitalist Russia has to be thwarted for by almost any means necessary. And to me, this is a very dangerous. State of mind that the U.S. has got troops on the Russian border. They've when the Soviet Union did collapse, the U.S. had promised Gorbachev, the prime minister of Russia, that that in return for allowing the reunification of Germany. At that time, there was East Germany and West Germany, but they would be unified when the Soviet Union collapsed. And we promised the Soviets that we would not take it, that a unified Germany would not move NATO to the Russian borders. It would not move, I think they quote, like 1 inch to the east. Well, we broke that promise right away. And we put troops right on the Russian border. So there's this feeling that, and then when Russia pushed back, there was this feeling that they were the aggressors, even though we were on their borders. And you, so if you look at a map, I think Russia has about, I think they have one military base overseas. A seaport, a naval base in Syria, where the U.S. has about I think they have about 800 military bases around the world. Most of them are kind of all ringing the Soviet Union and China, kind of a wall of bases around these two. Supposedly enemy countries. And so also to maintain these bases and the armies and the Air Force and everything, we have a military budget of about, I think the official budget is about $750 billion. But if you add up, put in all the extras and all the add-ons, it comes to about $1 trillion a year that the United States spends on preparing for war. And to me, this is really insane. Here we have all you have to do is look around our city streets where homeless people are camped out in tents or cardboard cartons, and you can see that our economy, you know, the stock market may be hitting new highs all the time, but the underlying economy is really kind of in a mess. People are not being served by it. We have no national health insurance, which other countries have. We have the austerity for almost everybody except the rich, and all kinds of social programs. Go to any city, any state in this country, and you'll see that social programs are being kind of hampered by lack of funding. Well, there's this big, huge pot of money at the Pentagon, but nobody wants to touch that. In fact, the big pot of money was voted there not just by Trump's Republicans, but the Democrats joined it. It's a bipartisan effort to create this huge military budget. And so it's skewed the economy. In my mind, it is destroying, it is really slowly eating away at this nation. If anybody wants to, how do you people out there in Radio Land feel? Do you think that the military budget is hurting us or helping us? Give us a call, 503-231-8187. Your chance to get on the air and talk about it. To me, this is sort of the unexamined horror story of our economy, that we are misallocating the wealth we do have towards a war that we claim we hope never happen. And so it's very interesting. In the meantime, while all this is going on, I just read that bunker sales are very brisk. The bunker business is doing pretty well these days, that people are spending a lot of money to live in kind of luxurious underground shelters, just in case the ball drops and things do get that a war and bombing does break out. Well, with an atomic war, the nuclear war, these bunkers would be really useless. They're a waste of money, a waste of hope. Because when you build a bunker and think that you and your family can survive a nuclear war, this is really a false hope. Because what happens when the bombing stops and you come out of your underground bunker, assuming you have enough food in there and enough oxygen to live long enough to come out, but you come out to a war, a country, a world that is basically scorched and devastated. This is a false hope that people can survive a nuclear war, or they think that they can go to some place like New Zealand, which is another false hope. I think that back in the 50s there was a very interesting novel about this by a writer named Neville Shute, Shute. Don't remember the name of the book right now, but the novel was some people, there had been a nuclear war, and some people had found safety in New Zealand, but it was a false safety because radiation and death was slowly creeping south of the equator and approaching their refuge in New Zealand. So it was just a matter of time before they too were killed by the atomic war that they thought they had escaped. But nevertheless, bunker sales are doing very well, and some real estate promoters are making a lot of money selling these bunkers to people with the money and the false sense of hope that goes along with that. In fact, I think some of the bunkers are even in missile silos, underground missile silos that have been deactivated. So you have these big holes in the ground. They're in the Dakotas, some of them, where missiles used to wait to be triggered, But now there's just big holes in the ground, and people have, I guess, been able to outfit them to live some kind of underground life. To me, this is a kind of supreme lunacy of the times. But nevertheless, there are people with the money and the inclination to do this.
We have a call up here.
We have a caller.
Yeah,
hello.
I believe Marcos is on the air.
Marcos, hello. Good morning.
Yes, the sad anniversary of the 75th year since the bombing of Hiroshima. Most Americans have been able to live with a certain mythology around the bombings, that they were necessary. A number was pulled out of the air at the time that a million lives supposedly were saved by the bombings. There was a review immediately after the war by the bombing command, the top generals involved with the bombing campaign, and it was determined that there was absolutely no military necessity for the bombings. Japan had no navy, no air force, and was in fact suing for peace using diplomatic channels. Their one caveat, which you mentioned, was that they wanted their emperor to be exempt from any kind of prosecution after the war. The United States said no, they would only accept a unconditional surrender, meaning no stipulation about the emperor. Ultimately, the United States granted the Japanese wish that the emperor would not be prosecuted. So the bombings were completely unnecessary. Fast forward to the present, President Obama committed $1 trillion, that's with a T, in other words, $1,000 billion to a nuclear weapons enhancement program or improvement program.
Oh, really?
A $1 trillion. You can look this up. And we're still with that program. That program was not ended with the election of Trump. So we're committed to spending that kind of money to further nuclear weapons development, with the idea that the old weapons that we have aren't good enough, that we need to modernize them. We need newer, better, faster nuclear weapons. This was the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, President Obama. So the very idea of nuclear war has not philosophically been challenged by many Americans. Once you accept the idea that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were necessary, if you believe that, then you believe somehow in the usefulness of having nuclear weapons, which is the road to hell.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
Thank you for that comment. That's very interesting information. You also have another development in military strategy where, you know, you have supposedly smaller and smaller nukes. I think they call them battlefield nukes, where a nuclear weapon does not have to be a bomb that can destroy an entire city, but it could be some kind of a smaller version. I'm not sure what they would call it, that destroys has a smaller target area and does less damage, and does damage only to the enemy, not to one's own troops. And this, to me, this is another false hope that somehow we can have a nuclear war without all the horrible side effects and blowback. And this is our war planners, they are very persistent. They say they do not want a war, but they keep planning for one. Of course, their logic is that by planning for one, you make it less likely to happen, which I think is false logic. But anyway, in the meantime, it keeps our munitions makers and arms manufacturers very profitable. This is, when you spend a trillion dollars a year on preparing for war, that money goes somewhere. It goes to these corporations that produce all this, all these weapons and delivery systems, and some of it trickles down to the people who work in the factories. But I think most of it, a lot of it, goes to profits, which pump up the stock market, which is hitting new highs all the time. At the same time that the rest of our economy is tanking. This is sort of the fallout from this war mentality, which you could say it began 75 years ago, because at that time we thought that we had a monopoly on nuclear weapons and that we could basically rule the world. And we found out that the Russians also had theirs, but there are people who still think that in one way or another we have the power, if we use it, to kind of put the Russians back in line and make them do what we tell them. So that is sort of my observation. This is sort of 75 years ago, is still with us. This mentality, kind of war mentality, is it didn't go away, is still with us in a new and kind of more subtle guise. So having said that, I want to thank everybody for listening and calling in. And so this has been Fight the Empire. Stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station. Thank you.